everybody, and welcome to Paul Listening Behind the Curtain, our opportunity to take a look at theater and the arts. And boy, what a special show we have for you today. I'm interviewing a legend, an icon who indeed is going to be getting an icon award from the Porchlight Music Theater right here in Chicago. Coming up, we'll tell you about that. But for now, I want to introduce you to a woman who, you know, when you say somebody doesn't need an introduction, sometimes you mean it. I mean it this time. And that is Ms. Leslie Uggams. Ms. Uggams, it's so great to see you. What an amazing career. Thank you for your time. Well, we can't wait to see you in Chicago. You're going to be coming here, going to give you a big award for the Porchlight Music Theater. But I want to talk in our time we have here a little bit about your career. I want to start with the most latest, because the people who are watching TV now, they'll say, wait a minute, what wasn't that the woman who played Ernestine in The Gilded Age on HBO? And the answer is, yeah, that was you in episode 7.
That was me. It was so much fun.
How did that come about? Because it's a brief part. But I have a funny feeling there's going to be a season 4, and I'm thinking you're going to be back for it.
That would be lovely. What's so wonderful about that show, there's so many great theater actors that are making appearances on that show, which is wonderful, So, and I love the show. I was watching the show from the beginning. So when I was asked, I jumped at the chance. I didn't care what kind of role I wanted to be a part of it.
And your part, you look like it kind of a busybody, maybe a gossip.
Yes, a busybody villain.
Okay, and you must have loved that.
I start the mess.
I love it. And reacquainting you perhaps with some old friends like Felicia Rashad and others who involved in that show.
Yes, and Audra, that whole group.
Oh my God. Yeah, I love that show. I can't wait for it every week. And again, when episode 7 came on and I watched, I went, that's Leslie Uggams. That was so great. Let us talk a little bit, because one of the reasons you're coming into Chicago to receive the Icon Award from the Porchlight, that's going to be on Sunday, September 14th. And I'm going to be with you. I'm going to get to interview you on stage there front of everybody. Yeah, we're going to meet again in person. But your career, it's been so varied and so amazing. I want to walk through it a little bit. We're going to touch on the key parts. But I want to go back, because your life starts like when you're 6, right? I mean, you were doing, you had an aunt, a mom. You weren't new to the world of the theater when you were a little kid.
Yes. Well, you know, my first thing was with Ethel Waters on her television show, Beulah, which was not a national show. It was more of a local show. But that's where I got my feet wet, and playing her niece on this one particular episode, which was not only terrific to get that opportunity, but we became she kind of took me and my mother under her wing. And every time she would perform, she would invite us. So I got to see this incredible artist sing with just a piano, and it was just amazing.
And just to have that memory is unbelievable. I know that you also, your Aunt Eloise also, she sang on Broadway with Pearl Bailey. So she was kind of, was she a main influence for you to say, I want to get involved? Because I know your dad wasn't really for this early on.
No. He was nervous about how women were treated in show business.
Well, he had a right to think that.
Yes. And so he wasn't keen about it. But my Aunt Eloise, she was the one that introduced me more to classical music and, you know, things like that. But I don't think any of them really thought about me. This was going to be a career. It was kind of like, keep her out of trouble. She's not hanging in the street. Keep her busy.
How did you look at it? That's what they thought. What did you think?
I was a ham. All you had to do before you could get it out of your mouth, would you like to? Yes, I want to sing. I want to dance. I want to whatever, you know. So for me, it was great. It was great. My first acting class was in an acting class with Sal Mineo. I mean, you know, I started with some great background and some great teachers.
Well, you've also interacted with some amazing talent. I want to talk about that, but let me just go back. I know you went to Juilliard for a little bit.
Until a guy named
Mitch Miller maybe got in the way of that.
Well, yeah, that's what happened. You know, Sing Along with Mitch all of a sudden became very popular.
That's when I started my relationship with you, was Sing Along with Mitch. I remember that.
Yes. So it was, you know, I couldn't go to Juilliard full time, but I did take several courses, and it was a wonderful, wonderful time, the brief time that I had there.
I know at age 9, I think it was, you sang at the Apollo, and that opened up so many doors. And I just, So talk about the Schiffmans, who you got a lot of support when you worked at the Apollo.
Well, first of all, they had a radio show that was a contest, and they would have a celebrity bring on whoever they were bringing. And a lady named Thelma Carpenter brought me on, and I kept winning every week, and they couldn't get rid of me. So they took a liking to me, and they decided to put an act together and put me on the stage as a professional at the Apollo Theater. They paid for my act and everything. And so from 9 till I was 16 years old, I would play the Apollo every year. And what a great, it's the best school you could possibly be at, because I started off with Louis Armstrong, then Ella Fitzgerald, Dinah Washington, and then the doo-wop groups came in, the Drifters and people like that. So I got a great education.
I had just the rare experience of watching Louis Armstrong perform once at a distance. I was a kid, but I, to this day, am a huge Louis Armstrong fan. Can you just tell me a little bit about, because there was, I don't know, there's lots of jazz musicians, there's lots of people. There was something about Louis Armstrong, Leslie, in my world that just came across the lights and out into the audience.
Well, first of all, he was such a wonderful, warm, kind human being. And the audience just ate him up, you know, and he was, of course, talented as can be. And I watched every performance. There was like a little corner, a little nook on the stage where nobody could see me. And I would just watch. I was fascinated by how the audience just gravitated to him before he even played a note. So, and we, again, I was very fortunate because he took a liking to my family, and we were invited to his home in Queens. So we spent off time with him as well. His favorite dish was red beans and rice. And his wife, Lucille, yes, she could cook. And it was a great time.
You know, when you come to Chicago, Louis Armstrong lived here for an awfully long time, too.
Yes, I remember reading about that. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
You also worked, as you said, with Ella Fitzgerald. And if my memory is correct, it was Ella who would watch you. Like, I mean, just it goes to show what a young kid you were. You're outside the stage door playing hopscotch. And she was watching.
Yes. And she would take a chair and sit right there in front of the
Ella Fitzgerald door, watching you do hopscotch.
Hopscotch. And then the ice cream truck would come by and she'd buy me ice cream. She always thought I was too skinny, and she always had tons of food in her dressing room. So she constantly invited my mother and I into the dressing room. The great thing that I was also lucky about is the fact that they put me on the same floor as the headliner. So I got a great experience hanging out with them because I was right across the hall.
As a little kid, even though you were doing the show, so you must have been getting recognized already when you'd go out. And so you were getting that kind of star experience just early on.
I was the Black Shirley Temple.
But you were singing so Pennies from Heaven, not the Good Ship Lollipop.
No. But the great thing about it, you know, I was kind of like the darling of my neighborhood. They were very proud of me. Very encouraging.
Let me take you back to 1967 and Hallelujah Baby.
Yes.
It was about, I mean, they just didn't make shows like that back then where African-Americans were the stars and the focus, and it was about civil rights and, you know, not to mention the Tony you picked up. But you know, I mean, that was a really unusual thing to happen on Broadway back in those days.
Well, first of all, it was unusual because it was written for Lena, Miss Lena Horne. And Arthur Lawrence and Lena had a little, they were best friends, but they had a little falling out. And they decided they wanted to go with the newcomer, and I wound up, you know, auditioning for the show, and finally I got the part. So that was amazing to have a starring role on Broadway, and I had never done Broadway before. I'd done theater before, but I had never done Broadway theater. You know, I had done regional theater and musicals like that. So that was quite something. And then I'm working with the A+ team. Julie Stein, Comden and Green, Arthur Lawrence, I mean, Burt Chevlo.
Absolutely.
what a way to start.
And by the way, was there, since you took over, you know, in that way for Lena Horne, can you talk about, did you have a friendship with Lena Horne? I was a huge Lena Horne fan, including Lady and Her Music, which she did on Broadway in her final years, which was stunning.
Well, I mean, my parents worshipped and adored Lena Horne as I was growing up, but they always talked about Lena. My mother was a brief Cotton Club dancer when Lena was there. And so she was worshipped and adored, but I had not met her before I did Hallelujah Baby, which I think is a good thing. He might have been very intimidated. But, I mean, every time Lena was in a movie, we would rush to the theater to see her. You know, she was quite something. And for my 18th birthday, I was taken to see her at the Waldorf Astoria. And, oh, my God, she was just incredible, incredible.
You may have known a good friend of mine, Jean-Claude Baker, who was Josephine Baker's son,
yes,
right?
Yes,
and he owned Chez Josephine in New York, which is one of my favorite places to eat. And when Lena Horne passed away, and Jean-Claude was at her funeral, and he said to me, we were at dinner one night, and he was very upset by the fact that at her funeral, while it was attended by many, but he said, I don't see the young stars here. I don't see the people who for whom she paved the way and wouldn't be who they are today. And did he have a point?
Well, you know, it's like anything else. When you're young and everything, you don't know it. Remember anything past 2 weeks ago, you know, is that kind of situation.
I
think that even today, there's a lot of people, you mentioned great people that I think is wonderful from our era and everything. And a lot of kids go, who? I mean, that's how it is. That's the world we live in, you know. There's not a lot of past that's appreciated when it comes to show business. So if you're able to be relevant, that's a wonderful thing.
I also remember where you came big in the television world. I was a big Smothers Brothers fan, to be honest with you, so I wasn't happy when they got canceled.
I'm sure you weren't.
But I imagine the cancellation might have worked to your benefit. I'm sure you like the Smothers Brothers, but it helped because that's what paved the way for the Leslie Uggam Show, which people also made history. Why did you make, I'm going to let you tell it, why did you make history back with the Leslie Uggam Show?
Well, first of all, you didn't see African-Americans other than Nat King Cole when he had his show, and it didn't last, even though he had these amazing people as guests on the show. The sponsors were not very supportive. And so this was quite something when I went on to do Sing Along with Mitch, you know, and then to have my own show, which originally I was thinking of, I was going to do a sitcom. Nobody ever said to me about, you're going to be doing a musical night. But of course, when they fired the Smothers Brothers, it was very clever because you couldn't complain very much because it was an African-American woman who took over the show. You know,
But you made a difference too, because you did this reoccurring sketch called Sugar Hill.
That's right.
And you brought in some people in that show that I think even you're kind of thinking, are they going to let me do this? And you got away with bringing in some pretty big names.
And I've had Sly and the Family Stone, The Temptations, Stevie Wonder, all these people. I introduced chocolate to CBS.
And we're glad you did. Everyone's waiting for me to talk about Roots and Deadpool. We're going to do that. I do want to mention that Ms. Uggams is going to be honored by the Porchlight Music Theater this year with the Icon Award on Sunday, September 14th at 11 a.m. It's a brunch at a little hotel, Leslie, you might have heard of, called the Ritz-Carlton.
Here
in Chicago. It's at Water Tower Place. You're going to love it. And you're going to have a great time, I know, when you're there. And I look forward to it. I'll be interviewing there. So people who want to come join Leslie and me for that event, you can get tickets at porchlightmusictheater.org. And theater spelled the proper British way, T-R-E. I also want to mention that they're going to be giving a Luminary Award, which I was honored with to get last year. The Luminary Award is given to people who make a difference in the theater, the community theater. Theater community in Chicago. This year goes to Brenda and James Grusecki. So you'll get to meet them as well, and I'm looking forward to it. Can we talk a little bit about Roots? Because, you know, it is many years ago, but for folks anywhere near my age, that was just critical. And you playing the role of Kizzy Reynolds, that had to be a tough thing for you to do because you had some memories going back to your grandmother that weren't all that far from what you were dealing with.
Yes. Well, first of all, to be a part of Roots was incredible. I got to audition. It was a fluke. I was watching the Dinah Shore Show, and Richie Pryor was on, and he brought Alex Haley on, and they talked about this book, Roots. And I oh my God, this is fascinating to find your history and stuff like that. And when my husband came home later on, I said to him, I just saw the show, and I wish I could be a part of it. He's got a book, and I'm a big book reader. And so that's all I said. And then I went on the road doing some nightclub engagements. And when I came back, my husband had gotten me an audition for Roots. And so I went in, and of course, through several different auditions, I finally got that part. And then when I got involved in it, it was like, oh my gosh, you know, I mean, you read about what little we have in schools about our history. You read about certain things, but when you get to play that kind of situation, it was hard. It was very, very hard. And I was always on the phone to my mother, why? I can't believe it. Grandma went through this and everything. And so it was a highlight of my career for me.
Well, and it'll never be forgotten because it's a major piece. I'm not going to make you jealous, but I do have a signed autographed copy of Roots by Alex Haley. I'll just
let yes, you know. He was such a dear man, such a dear, 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 dear man.
And also what people may not remember is, so you play a slave girl or whatever who gets sold off, but people may not remember that because she said, you know, got to be such a sweetheart in our lives. But the person who may have lost some friendships back there was Sandy Duncan, because her character wasn't. People weren't happy with what she was.
They were not happy. I mean, even when we were shooting it, after we finished with that scene, they kind of isolated her. But I had known Sandy before, and Sandy said, "Thank God we knew each other before I did this part." You know, because she.
How did you balance it? You know, when you had to do these tough scenes and these tough roles, and the tough scenes in Roots, when they'd say cut. Did you just say, okay, I'm going over to the table and have some lunch now? Or did that kind of stick with you and just you had to live with that for the day?
Oh, yeah, I had to live with that for the day because I was hysterical. And I mean, it practically carried me, you know, to a chair after I did that particular scene. It was extremely hard because, I mean, it's like what people are going through today, being separated from your family, never to be able to see them again. Yeah. And because she got jealous about whatever it was that she was mad at me about, and forced to be separated from people you're never going to see again in your life. It was just excruciating.
And I want to shift from that, because you think about those kind of lives. You say, well, thank goodness we're well beyond that. Well, I'm not so sure just
exactly.
How great things are. But I want to take you back to the 60s. You had been married. You know, you don't talk a lot, at least publicly. At least I don't hear you talk a lot about your husband, Graham. You're getting near 60 years of marriage. Hello,
in
Hollywood.
October.
Hollywood success.
Yes.
But do you mind just briefly telling the story? I know you attended Martin Luther King Jr.'s funeral back in 1968 in Atlanta. One would think, okay, Atlanta, it's the South, but it is a big city. But yet, nevertheless, questions. Oh, I should say, Graham is Australian. He is white and he's Australian. And that hit you from time to time, the fact that you were in a mixed marriage.
Well, it was a friend of ours was involved in getting us down to Atlanta for the funeral. And we checked into the hotel and we were unpacking our things, and there was a loud knock on the door, and opened the door, and there was that friend of ours saying, "Oh my God, what are you doing? You can't be in the same room together." And my husband said, "That's my wife. I'm not going anywhere."
Does he still have that Australian accent?
Oh yes. Oh yeah. But that's part of the marriage contract. You cannot lose an accent.
I picked up so many phrases. Just tell him I said no worries, and he'll know we're good.
No worries. Yes.
Okay, I have to talk about Deadpool. We have a few minutes left, but if I don't do this, people are going to be real upset with me. My understanding is you were like doing MAME or something in Miami, Florida, and you get the phone call saying, "Hey, look, got a role for you. You get to swear a lot and you're blind. What do you think?"
Well, the funniest thing is that I was in Boca doing MAME, but the thing is they said, we have this audition for you, and you audition on your phone. And I was like, what? People audition on the phone. He said, "Oh yes, yes, yes." And I'm not technically good at certain things. and I was like,
"That's why we have kids,
right?"
Leslie.
Hello, thank God. And I was saying, "How am I going to do this?" And that night, when I went into the theater, I was telling one of my fellow actors. I said, "I can't believe it. They want me to audition on a phone." And he said, "Well, I have a camera. I'll help you." And it was because of him with his equipment that we did it. With a camera, but I had no idea who she was. Everything was encrypted, so I had no idea who she was, what she was doing. I just thought, what a klutz! This woman is such a klutz. And it's the interesting thing is when I finished doing Deadpool, Ryan came to me, knocked on the trailer door, and he said to me, "I just want you to know, my goodness, when I saw your audition, you were so full of energy and stuff like that." And I thought, oh. Thank you. I'm glad I got this part and everything. And of course, you know, Blind Al is cool. She's not very energized.
Just one other thing I want to mention, we'll wrap up with some general stuff, but American Fiction, it's another one. Didn't know, I went to see it, I'm watching the screen, I'm going, that's Ms. Leslie Uggams.
Yeah, that was such a wonderful movie. So many people come up to me today and talk about they're going through issues with their parents or someone in their family, and they felt that I really honored them with respect.
What is a Leslie Uggams role?
I like everything. See, I don't like to do the same thing over and over and over again. And if you tell me to jump off the cliff, I always go, well, that'd be interesting where I land, but I'll jump. So any role that I find interesting about the characters, and I was thinking the other day, most of the women that I have played, they may start off sometimes as a victim, but they wind up being empowered and having something to say.
When projects come along to you, do you? I mean, I've talked to some well-known actors who just go, "Yeah, it's a gig. I work." Is that part of your view? Is your view sort of, no? I need to make a difference. I need to see who I'm playing here, whether it's fun or whether it's historic. I want to make a difference.
Well, I like to make a difference, and I also like to see when I read a script, not only what my character is saying, but I like to hear what the other people involved in the story, what they're saying about my character.
Is Leslie Uggams a singer who acts, or are you an actor who also sings? And maybe that's changed over the years.
I'm a singing actor. I never give up my singing. You know, every now and then I'll do a gig, get back, you know, that's, I wake up in the morning with a song in my head. I go to sleep at night with a song in my head.
You know, Barbara Streisand keeps doing these partner albums. That would be a really good partnership.
Barbara, call me, darling. We go back, you know.
I love it. Do we know whether we're in Gilded Age season 4 yet? Can you tell me if you know?
No, I just found out that they got, you know, picked up. I would certainly love to do it. I'd like to start some more trouble.
We're going to make this. I know Carrie Coons. We're going to make sure that we're going to make sure people see this. So that we'll get you in the season 4. And is there anything else? I mean, is there a movie? Anything you're working on right now that we need to know?
Well, I did a series last year that was very successful. So we'll see what happened. It was called Fallout.
Gotcha.
And it seemed to be very popular with the young people. So we'll see what happens.
And, you know, to look back at we didn't get to Nurse Jackie. We didn't get to so many things that you have done because we're out of time. But we're going to get to talk again. And it's going to be on Sunday, September 14th at 11 a.m. brunch. You get to meet Ms. Leslie Uggams and me at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel in Chicago at Water Tower Place. Tickets at porchlightmusictheater.com. It's going to be, Leslie, I've been doing this for you. It's going to be a fantastic day and brunch. I can't wait to see you there. You're fabulous.
I can't wait.
I'm going to have a little behind-the-curtain gift for you. In fact, by the way, viewers can get behind-the-curtain material by going to WGNTV.com/store, and you can get some of the stuff I'm going to give Ms. Uggams when I meet her.
I love it. I like gifts.
You got me too. Bring me something. For now, let me just say, Ms. Leslie Uggams, it is an honor and a privilege to have gotten to talk to you, and I can't wait to see you in person on September 14th.
I'm looking forward to seeing you.
Thanks for joining us here, everybody. Thanks for watching Behind the Curtain.